I would like to introduce our main speaker for this evening, Jamie P. from San Diego.
Hi, my name's Jamie Petz. I'm a real alcoholic. And it's an honor and a privilege to be here. It's an honor and a privilege to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous because I'm a drunk and I drank every day. So let's see. Happy birthday to all the birthday receivers. And I'm really glad to see this meeting as H&I and After Hours Phone. I believe in service. I do a lot of service. My sobriety date is June 10th, 2002. That was not my first sobriety date. I'm just going to share in a general way what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like today. That's the guidelines that the big book tells us. That's how we're supposed to share. So I can tell you what it was like. Give you a snapshot of my life. I drank it every day. And I drank every day from the time I was 18. My parents moved to Oklahoma when I was in high school, and I did not go with them. I stayed in California. And when I turned 18, I started drinking. And there wasn't anyone around to tell me no or give me any kind of counseling or role modeling or anything like that. You know, there wasn't anybody telling me, maybe you should go to school. Or, you know, maybe you drink too much. Or there wasn't, that was not my story. So I came to San Diego because I dated a guy for 6 months. We got married. I moved to San Diego. And a month later, I was pregnant with twins. And that's kind of how I just operated. Excuse me. I would jump into a situation with both feet. And then look around and wonder, how did I get here? And, you know, when my life wasn't working, I would just, you know, move or get a different job or get a divorce, you know. And all of those things worked for me for a very long time. So in the year 2000, I was working at Lido's as a waitress in Lemon Grove, and I was married, and I had a little girl, and we owned a home. And if you looked at everything from the outside, it looked like it was okay. The truth is, I would get up in the morning, and I would take my daughter to school. And I would hit the bar. And by noon, I'm passed out. And 2 o'clock, I come to, you know, in time to pick her up. And I start drinking again. And on the days I work, I don't drink before work because I know if I take a drink, I'm not going to stop drinking. Because I'm a real alcoholic, as described in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Once I start drinking, I don't know where I'm going to end up or how long it's going to go for. So then I would get off work. I would go to the local liquor store and buy an 18-pack and a fifth and go home and watch TV and argue with the television and play solitaire. And then I'd, you know, take a hit off a joint and go to bed. And that's how I managed and control. And that was my life for a very long time there at the end. So I didn't know it was going to be my last drink on September 7th. It was just like any other day. I got up and got drunk, and I took my daughter, we went out to dinner, and when we were leaving, I fell down in a parking lot, and a woman approached me and took my daughter by the hand and said, "You don't have a right to do this to her." And to this day, I could not tell you what that woman looks like, what her name is. I left my daughter in that parking lot. I got in my car and I went home. And the next day I woke up and I didn't have a car. My purse was in the driveway with the empty pizza box. And there wasn't anybody home. I didn't have, my daughter wasn't home. I had older girls. They weren't home. My husband wasn't home. And he called, my husband called me and told me, "Do you know what you did yesterday?" And I said, "No, I don't." And he said, you left our daughter in a parking lot, and you either get help or you get out." And my husband had told me many things for a long time, you know, because I'm a blackout drinker and I don't remember. And I had long adopted my way of dealing with the horror stories was, if I don't remember it, it didn't happen, and you're just giving me shit. So I don't believe you. And, you know, I don't know why I believed him that day, but I did. And deep down in my soul, I knew that he was right. So, you know, I don't know how to get sober. I don't know anybody who's sober. I don't, you know. Why would you know anyone who's sober when you're drunk like me? So I called the doctor, and they sent me to API here in La Mesa, Alvarado Parkway Institute, and my husband drove me over there, and I did an alcohol assessment, and he answered every question. He told them all about my drinking, and I didn't say a word, not a word. I just sat there and cried, And we went upstairs, and they told me that I was not sick enough to be an inpatient, but they would let me do the outpatient treatment, you know, if I was willing to show up. And so I did that. I did, it was a 12-week program, 3 hours, 3 days a week for, I don't know, 3 hours a session or something. And, you know, I sat in that room, and there was about 60 of us in that room. And the facilitator told us, "Look around, because only 1 out of 10 of you will stay sober. The rest of you will drink." And I thought, so what? That's a good idea, you know. I drink. That's what I do. That's my solution, you know. And I'm terrified. And so I go to these sessions, and they tell me I have to go to AA. I have to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. I have to get a sponsor. And if I really want to stay sober, I have to do these steps. And, you know, I looked at the steps on the wall. They're here on the wall. And I knew I was an alcoholic. You know, when I was at API that first day, I find that was the first time I ever said out loud that I that I'm an alcoholic, and I felt the burden lift off my shoulders. Not that this was a good thing, but it was like I finally said it out loud, you know. So I went to Alcoholics Anonymous, and there was women there, and they told me, "You know, you never have to feel this way again, you know, because I'm full of shame and guilt. And, you know, I always wanted to be a good mother. I always wanted to be a good mom and a good person. And, you know, I went to church as a kid. And when I saw these steps on the wall, I knew I was screwed. I knew I was screwed because, you know, I grew up in a religious home where we went to church, And I come from a home that was full of violence and alcoholism and secrets. And you don't talk about stuff, and you don't tell people what's going on in the home. And so, you know, as a little girl, I prayed to God and asked him to help. And, you know, he never did. He never did. I remember when I was 9 years old, hiding in a closet, just praying to God, just let me grow up. Please, just let me grow up. So when I walked in and I saw these on the wall, it was like, oh, suck. Because he didn't help me then. Why would he help me now? So, you know, I was going to API, and the facilitator there, she told me, you need to go see a psychiatrist because, you know, you're a relapse waiting to happen. I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know what that meant, but I was going to meetings every day, 2 meetings, 3 meetings. I was going to meetings, and not because I was really liking the meetings, but I wasn't drinking. I wasn't drinking one day at a time, and it was a place to go, and because I'm a bar drinker, you know. I hang out on the bar, and so now I can hang out at a meeting, but at least, you know, there's some element of safety there, if not sanity. I don't think there was too much sanity going on, but... So I went to the psychiatrist, and he gave me antidepressants and sleeping pills. And I decided that I didn't need a sponsor. Well, I got this old lady sponsor, but she says she wouldn't do the steps, so she was perfect for me. And I decided I'd do the steps with my therapist. So so I was, you know, going to AA meetings. I'm not drinking one day at a time, and I'm doing the steps with this therapist till it got to the fifth step. And I'm going to, you know, meetings and book studies, and I'm reading the book. And so when it gets to the fifth step, I can't tell my therapist what's in the fifth step. So, I mean, you know, this therapist that I got was a marriage counselor, because just before I quit drinking, the summer before my last drink, I had had an affair and had to have a medical procedure. And my husband decided that in order to save the marriage, we needed counseling. So she had watched me, you know, through these months. And I didn't want to tell her, you know, my fifth step because I would look bad. And the book talks about that, you know. Therapy rarely works for us because we're not honest. We're not willing to tell them what's going on. So I picked a lady in Alcoholics Anonymous and told her my fifth step. And I figured that was safe, you know. And what happened for me was at the end of that year, this lady she was my former sponsor. She had listened to my fifth step. She ended up becoming my sponsor. She told me maybe you should get rid of the pills. So she told me go to the doctor and see if he'll wean you off. Here's the deal. You know, when I drank every day, I didn't take pills. You know, I didn't take pills. I drank every day for 25 years. I could do outside issues, you know, so I could drink more or go to sleep. But I didn't, you know, do stuff to, like, control how I felt. I drank. That's why I drank. Hello. So when I stop drinking, I get depressed. Well, yeah, I drank for 25 years and I just lost my best friend. You'd be depressed, too. That's not going to get cured by a pill. That's my experience. It didn't get cured by a pill. So when she told me, why don't you try getting off the pills? I'm like, yeah, I can do that. So I went home and I dumped them in the toilet. And then I called her and I said, I'm off the pills. And she said, I told you to go to the doctor. And I'm like, yeah, well, I don't want to do that. So, you know, and this is how I operate. I don't want to do it. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to do what I want, you know. And if you don't like it, well, you know. Can't kick me out. It's AA. I read the steps, you know. Can't kick me out. You're stuck. So, I got a new sobriety date. That's how I ended up with June 10th. I actually, like, quit in May or, like, early June, and this other gal that was in one of my meetings, hers was June 9th, and I wasn't going to share with her. No way. Forget it. So I picked June 10th because, you know, I'm selfish, self-centered. I want what I want, and I'm special, don't you know? And You know, I make plans and God laughs, you know. It took me 3 years to figure out that June 10th is AA's birthday. Hello. It's not mine. It's not anything special. So I share it with thousands and thousands of a fellowship that has saved my life. So that's not a bad thing. So I started over. And I started working the steps, and as they're written in the book, with a sponsor, you know, and my life changed, and my life got better. And, you know, I was, like, happier to be sober. But I'll be honest with you, what happened for me was just because I stopped drinking, and I was doing the meetings, and I'm doing the deal, and I wrote the inventory, and I read the fifth step again, and I'm walking through the amends process. It was with the amends process that God started really entering my life, because I didn't believe that God would help me. That's my story. That's my experience. God wouldn't help me. My higher power was the ocean, because, you know, I'm a good, strong swimmer, and it's just water after all. But I know for a fact that if I jump in it, eventually I'm going to drown, because it's bigger than me, and I'm just a human being. So that was my higher power to begin with, was the ocean. And so what happened for me was, even though I was doing the next indicated step, the actions that they tell us, I was also still acting out. I was still going to the bar after work. I wasn't drinking, but I was throwing darts. Yeah, right. I'm hanging out, trying to get, some sense of normalcy. And when I couldn't hang with that anymore because I thought I was going to drink. Then I started spending money. And, it just got really ugly. I have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. And the book talks about if you cannot go places and, have a legitimate reason to be there, and it's because you still have an alcoholic mind. And that's the only place I can think of in the big book where it talks about, our alcoholic mind. It talks about the strange mental blank spot and the mental twist preceding the first drink. And, I never really thought that I fit in, So the whole step two, where it talks about came to believe that power could restore to sanity. I didn't understand that because I didn't really think I was ever sane. When I was drinking, one day I decided I'm going to drive home with my eyes closed, and I wreck my car and I think, no problem. I just need another car because with practice, I'll be able to drive home with my eyes closed. This is the way I think, At the end of that first year, I had a plan, I was married when I stopped drinking, and we were growing marijuana in the garage. And I got a different job, and I went to my husband and I told him, I'm trying to live the sober life and these spiritual principles, and we can't grow marijuana in the garage anymore. And he really just said, F off, man, you're crazy. You're off in this cult thing and whatever, lady, So I came up with a plan. I came up with an alcoholic with a plan is a scary thing. So I came up with a plan, and I'm going to get him arrested. He's going to go to court. They're going to make him go to AA, and we're going to live happily ever after. That was my plan. And it didn't work. It didn't work. I can tell you, he got really ticked off, and he was not happy. He was pissed. And I was floored when he filed for divorce. I could not believe it. So, My life changed dramatically. When I got here, I looked at those, you know, I looked at these people on Alcoholics Anonymous, and I thought, okay, I'll give you a year. I'll give you a year, and I'll jump in, and I'll do this thing full bore. And if my life doesn't get better, screw you, I'm going to go drink. And that was my deal, you know, and I didn't make any secret about it. Because, you know, it's either going to work or it's not going to work. And they told me, Jamie, your life may not get better, but it'll sure get different. And they didn't lie about that one. It got a lot different. It got a whole lot different. So what happened for me was I got in all this emotional pain. You know, when you're trying to live a sober life, but your behavior is dishonest, when you're using people, you're taking advantage of situations, it gets painful. It gets really painful. So what happened for me, I got in myself in a pickle where I had 5 maxed out credit cards. The IRS was after me, and I couldn't afford to pay my rent. And I went to my sponsor crying, and I told her, I will do anything you say. Anything you say, I will do, because if you don't help me, I'm going to go drink. And, you know, that was different behavior for me because, you know, she would tell me to do stuff and I would say, no, I'm not doing it. I'll kind of do it maybe if I want. But, so when I told her that, you know, it was a surrender for me. And, the first thing she had me do was cut up all my credit cards, and I had to, write out a budget. And I had to start living in the truth. And if I couldn't afford to do something, I had to say, you know what? That's not a good choice for me right now. I didn't have to say I can't afford it. I was, you know, it's just not a good choice for me right now. And just, I don't have to defend or explain. I just have to live in the truth. And nothing changed on the outside. I didn't get a better job. You know, what happened for me is when I started living in the truth, amazing things started happening. God was able to come into my soul and stuff just happened. Those credit cards were paid off like within 2.5 years. The IRS, you know, that was done like within the first 3 months. And what happened to me working and living honestly with money in and money out and actually writing things down and staying, keeping Alcoholics Anonymous number one. 2 years after I started the budget, I was able to buy my own home. And that had never happened for me as a single woman with kids. You know, I was amazed because when I first got here at Alcoholics Anonymous, they told me make a list of what you want out of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thought, I totally remember thinking the only thing I want to do is be able to sit up in the morning. Because in the last days before I was able to stop drinking, I could not sit up in bed and go to the bathroom. I would roll out of bed and crawl to the toilet. And that was the only thing I really wanted out of Alcoholics Anonymous. I wanted to be able to sit up and walk to the bathroom. Because that was like, ooh, that would be cool. You know? That would be, you know, not be all bloated and have to drink in the shower. That would be totally awesome. And, so, you know, I started working the ninth step and cleaning up my act, you know, because the ninth step for me, it was not only just about making right the wreckage that I created, but doing a different action so I didn't create more wreckage. That's, you know, the whole spirit of step nine is do no harm. So on step nine, you know, a lot of it was amends that I didn't know how to make. You know, I'm a mom, I'm a woman with children, and I have alcoholism. And, in 2000, when I finally stopped drinking, I have a set of twins that, were 18. So, those girls grew up with a drunk mom. And my youngest at that time was 5, almost 6. So you know, there was a lot of damage. I had three ex-husbands, and, you know, in 1989, I had been arrested for theft, grand theft and embezzlement, and I just had a lot of crap I had to clean up, you know, and I wasn't real looking forward to doing that stuff, but the cost of not doing it was meaning I was going to go drink again, and that's what the book tells me. If you're not willing to do this, I think at the end of the eighth step, the directions are in italicized. Remember, you are willing to go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. So, one of the, you know, I managed to do those one day at a time, and today I still have to do living amends to those children. There was one amends I didn't really know how to clean up. I had a dog, and his name was Ruffy, and he was a totally cool dog, but we bought when we moved to Lemon Grove. He would climb chain link fences. He was a lab, and he would climb chain link fences, and the, you know, the animal control would call and say, come get your dog, we got him. And every time I had to go pick him up, it was $35. It's like, dude, stop climbing the fence. So I tied him up to a tree out back, and Ruffy didn't die, but he got to a point where his collar got embedded in his neck, and I had to take him to the Humane Society, and they were able to doctor him. And I don't know, honestly, I don't know if they put him down or if they got someone else to care for him, but that was an amends that I didn't really know how do you clean that up? And so my sponsor told me, well, I want you to go around your neighborhood and knock on doors, pick up their dog, do and walk their dogs. And I'm like, forget it. I'm not doing that. Are you insane, lady? No way. I'm not doing that. So she said, well, you know, when the right amends is presented, you'll know it, you know. And that is so true. Anytime when I don't really know what to do or what direction to take, when I get on my knees and ask God, it becomes plain as day. So what happened for me was I was sponsoring this gal, and her husband were able to pay off their home, and so they're going to take this cruise to Australia. And she had just gotten a dog for, like, the previous Christmas, so she couldn't find a kennel for her dog. So she's like, I don't know what to do. And I'm like, oh, I know what to do. I'm like, I'll take care of your dog. She's like, I'm going to be gone for 3 weeks. I'm like, I will take care of the dog. You have to come over twice a day and you have to walk. And I'm like, I will take care of the dog. It's an immense thing for me. Don't worry about it. Your dog will be well taken care of. And she's like, oh, good, you can come over and meet him. And I'm like, really? Well, when I was a kid, I grew up in the Santa Cruz Mountains, and there was packs of dogs that would run the mountains. And the neighborhood guy made a bamboo pole with a steel tip on the end. So we would then, that's what we would walk back and forth to the bus shelter. So I kind of got this spirit of big dogs, right? So I'm like, oh, no problem, honey. What kind of dog do you have, right? I don't think to ask first. Doberman Pinscher. Nice, really. So I go over and I get to meet Zeus. And, you know, Zeus is this beautiful purebred, black, you know, cut tail, straight ears, spike collar, the whole bit, you know. And so we walk to the park, and she shows me their little deal. And Zeus has an electronic collar, so when he gets out of control, you can just zap him. And I'm just like, oh, my God. Oh, it would have been way easier to pick up dog do for the old people. But, you know, so it's like, so Trina, she goes on her cruise, and me and Zeus, man, the first week, I'm cussing all the way over there. And Zeus never growled. He never ran away. He was never inappropriate or hostile or aggressive in any way. And by the end of that three-week time when she came back from her vacation, you know, Zeus and I were fine pals. And, you know, and it was just something I had to walk through, you know. I don't have to be fearful, you know. And if I totally rely and depend on God, he will take care of everything. So, you know, step 10, I do on a daily basis on, 86 gives us, specific directions on, you know, we do a nightly review and we, you know, go over our day, and I don't always write that down, but if something's bugging me, I do. It's kind of tricky. My experience, you know, I'll come home from work and I have this great day and I'm like, you know, I'm getting ready for bed and I'm thinking, hey, I had an awesome day. I don't need to nightly review because, you know, I'm good. What I have found for me is that when I don't take time to pause and really do some serious reflection or write stuff, it kind of gets stuffed down. Oh, that wasn't that big a deal. Oh, no, that, you know. And before I know it, within a couple of weeks, I'm walking around with wrinkled eyebrows and taking your inventory, and it's all your fault. And it doesn't even mean you didn't even do anything. Or it does, you know. I just have to realize that when I start getting that way, it's me that needs to do the writing and call someone and follow the directions and reach out and see how I can be helpful. So, the 11th step on that whole, thought through prayer and meditation to, you know, I was told that this is a three step, it's a three phase step. Prayer is talking to God. Meditation is listening to God. And, knowing what His will is for me, I have no clue, and the power to carry that out. So, this is just what's worked for me. I don't know if you have the same experience, but I get on my knees and I pray. And then I do that whole daily reflections, and I have an outside, not AA literature meditation book that I do. And then by the time I'm in the car driving to work, I forgot. So I have another book in my car, so when I get to work, I can bring it out again. And it's when I get those feelings of, oh, so-and-so, you know, help her with this or do this. And so for me, having the courage to do what I know is the right thing because I got that urge in my gut, you know, sometimes that urge in my gut is to call someone I really don't like and see how they're doing. What I have found is when I do that, you know, one gal had gone out and drank. Another gal had had neck surgery. And it was just like, really, where did these ideas come from? Well, I believe that God is always with me. And if I'm willing to listen, He's willing to show me the way, you know. So it does, you know, when I get stuck, then I have to call somebody, and that's, you know, I try to call people on a regular basis and do a lot of service work. So, the 12th step, try to practice these principles in all our affairs. That's a little difficult for me, I'll be honest with you. I work with children, and it's not always easy to be respectful. Well, I work with children that are troubled and traumatized, and a lot of times I find, you know, I'm telling them what to do just because I said so or because I'm bigger than you, and that's really not a good reason. And I find myself getting knotted up in my gut, and I'll have to take a time out and just go pray and ask God to help me. My 12th step is working with others. And I really get a lot of relief in working with another alcoholic. I sponsor women, and I have 4-H and I commitments, and I have commitments at my meetings. And I don't know, you know, I live with an alcoholic, and I don't always practice them with him, but he has more time than me, so I think he's supposed to be better. So I love my husband very much, and I love being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I love being sober. I never thought I would say that. I never, ever in my wildest dreams thought that this was a good idea. You know, today's St. Patrick's Day. you know, and it's raining like heck outside. And I thought, you know, we were driving over and my husband's like, well, we're going to see who's really real alcoholics because only the really committed are going to come out in this weather and go to a meeting. And I, you know, and I'm like, look in the mirror, pal. Here we are. We're, you know, we're one of you. So I want to thank you for having me and thank Larry for asking me to speak. Thank you.